Okay, good evening, gentlemen. We continue the Rambam Hilchos Yom Tov, Perek Aleph, Halacha Yud Beis, Chapter 1, Law 12, in the Maznayim text. That puts us on page 184 and 185. We're discussing various laws, introductory laws of Yom Tov, and we mentioned that you cannot prepare permitted activities that are done on Yom Tov for the goal of them being used for after Yom Tov. Again, page 184. Oh, I think you got the wrong one. Okay. Did you have the other one with you? Okay, so you got to look on. Okay, look on with Jordan. Okay. Okay, it's a little confusing with the two. So we're talking about, you know, you may not prepare from Yom Tov for a weekday. So various things, but we said you could make a liberal amount, and if there's leftovers, you shouldn't be doing it in a cunning way. So we're continuing that thoughts in Halacha Yud Beis. Interesting scenario. Misha hoysalo behema mesukenes. A person had an animal, a cow that was very sick, was going to die. So if your cow dies, it's a big problem, because now you can't eat the cow. It's an avela. So what does the guy figure? Is this what he's going to do? He'll shecht it right before it dies. At least you'll have a kosher animal. You could have the meat. You could serve the meat. So now, lo yishchad olasom, but the problem is it's Yom Tov. So why are you really shechting it? You're really shechting it so you won't lose all the money of the full value of a potentially kosher cow. They're going to shech the whole cow.
Wouldn't it be treif?
No, only certain things make the animal treif. Not everything necessarily. It has to have certain deformities that would consider it treif. Not always, let's say it has a fever, you know, something, whatever, you know, that's
but
not...
But isn't one of them that'll be dying not, in less than a year?
But that's like, it's a, what do you call it, a handicap, let's say a hole in the lung, where that's something that's materially wrong with the animal. Here's, let's say, an infection, or something like that, so not necessarily was destined to die, but now it looks like it's going to die. So anyway, so now if you're shechting it, what are you really shechting it for? You're shechting it so you're going to be eating it after Yom Tov. We just said you can't prepare on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. Shechting, we said, is okay on Yom Tov. If you want to have a piece of meat on Yom Tov, you could shecht it. But now the situation would more obviously be that you're shechting it only to avoid the financial loss that's involved. So could you shecht it? So he says, lo yishchad oiseh b'Yom Tov, you can't shecht it on Yom Tov, elam kein, unless yodei you know, shiyocho lecho mimenu ksayis tzoli miba'od yom. If you know that you're hungry enough to eat at least a kezias of roasted meat on Yom Tov. Now, you could say, what, just for, now, first of all, why roasted? Because roasting is quick. You know, this is probably, you know, we're not speaking about a scenario where it's the night of Yom Tov, where you can shecht and you have a whole day to eat the animal. You're probably talking late afternoon, the cow is dying, you've already had your Yom Tov meal, you're not really that hungry, and time is running out. So number one, it has to be at least where you could roast it, because roasting is fast. On the barbecue, fast roast, you could do it quickly as opposed to cooking it. A. B, you have to be hungry enough to eat a kezias. Now that's a very little bit of the cow. So what allows this to happen? Because if you, let's say you're hungry to eat a kezias, which is a small amount, it's an ounce, right? You want to eat a kezias of meat, and there's no meat in the fridge, and you got Bessie out in the backyard. So now, if you want to have even one kezias of meat, what do you got to do? You got to shecht all of Bessie. So that's okay. If you want to have a kezias, you're entitled to shecht the whole animal, even though you only want the kezias. So if you're hungry enough to eat a kezias, and you will eat a kezias, roast a kezias on Yom Tov, then you could do it. Why? Because it has to be that. Because otherwise, if you're not going to eat anything, you're not allowed to shech something for weekday uses. The chen kol ki yitzva, there are any other similar cases where you want to make advantage primarily for after Yom Tov, but still you are definitely going to be eating it on Yom Tov. Okay, moving on. Yud Gimel, a very interesting halacha. Are you allowed to cook food for a goy that's going to eat with you on Shabbos, or on Yontif for that matter. How does this relate? Let's say I have a nanny in the house, right? And you're going to, let's say you cook for Yontif, you're cooking on Yontif, and you're going to, you know, throw in a few pieces of chicken for the nanny, or for other non-Jewish people that may be in your home on Yontif. Are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to, or better yet, are you allowed to invite non-Jews to your home for a Yontif meal or for a Shabbos meal, knowing that you're making preparations for them? So that's the discussion, halacha yud gimel. So the pure halacha is, ein ofim umevashlim biyontiv kedei lachilo goyim oklovim. You may not bake or cook on Yontif for the purpose of feeding non-Jews or dogs. Okay? Now, and for that matter, it's not just cooking or baking, but any of the permitted activities which benefit the person that you're allowed to do on Yontif. We've mentioned there's not just cooking, but any malacha that you can do on Yontif, you cannot do for a goy or for a dog. What's the source? Shenemar, because the pasuk says when it does permit you to do things for your physical needs on Yontif, it says, Hu levado, only this, yeyaseb may you do on Yontif. Then that's one more word, lochem, for yourselves. Lochem for you, velo lagoyim, and not for non-Jews. Lochem for you, velo laklovim, and not for dogs. Okay? In other words, the only leniency for you to cook or do whatever the body needs that you have is for you on Yontif, for you to enjoy the Yontif. We can't, or for another Jew, for that. Lochem means any Jews. You want to invite other Jews to your home, they're certainly allowed to, supposed to eat on Yom Tov too. I can cook for another Jew, not a problem. But, because the Jew is obliged to enjoy the Yom Tov. But Goyim are not obliged to enjoy the Yom Tov. So if I'm doing any cooking for the non-Jew, I'm doing work that's not really Yom Tov related. And the same thing for a dog. A dog, as much as you love your dog, you don't do any malachas for the dog on Yontif. Okay, therefore, what comes out of this...
So, Rabbi, they're choosing a dog because...
Any animal.
Because it's household, they're choosing it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be any other animal. That there's other girsas, for example, other texts that says libahema for his animal. So maybe it was common, whatever. But that's what it means. You cannot do a malach on Shabbos. Of course, you could feed them. You could feed them. You give them some gravy train. Open, you know, take out of the box and feed them. Certainly, you're mechuyev. You're obliged to feed them. But to do a melacha on Yontif, which is only allowed to be done for a person, you can't do for the dog. Lefika, therefore, what are you allowed to do? Mizamnim es hagoy b'Shabbos. You can invite a non-Jew to be at your home for a Shabbos meal, but ve'ei mizamnim oso b'Yontif. But you can't invite him for a Yontif meal. Why? What's the problem? The problem is, why not the Yontif meal? Zera, the rabbis made a decree, Shema Yarba Bishvilo, maybe you're going to add food for the non-Jew. Right? Because you're allowed to cook on Yontif. So since you can cook on Yontif, so we got the wife, this husband, a couple kids, and you're inviting your non-Jewish neighbor over. Another four people. So I got to prepare an extra chicken, whatever. So that you're not allowed to do. Now, why allowed to invite on Shabbos? Because on Shabbos you can't cook for even Jews. The problem is, you're not allowed to be actively involved on Yontif with food preparation for a goy. So even if I invite the non-Jew before Yontif, but if he's going to be at my table, and it's a great likelihood that a person will prepare some food, do some malachas on Yontif for that meal, which is permitted to be done for Jews. If you're going to have non-Jews, you will do extra work for the non-Jew, and that is not allowed to be done. That's not allowed to be done. So, theoretically, technically, it's possible to have a non-Jew at your table if you wouldn't add any prohibited activities on Yontif. And it could be, let's say you've set the whole table before Yontif, you've already cooked all the food before Yontif, everything's in a pot already, all you're going to do on Yontif is warm up one pot and all the food's in that pot anyway. So technically, you could say you could get away without doing it. But the rabbis are afraid, though, once it happens, you know, it's very common on the Yontif meal. Oh, I forgot to do this. I forgot to prepare the salad dressing, and there's certain malachas that involved in doing it. And now you're going to be doing it for the non-Jew. You're going to do more for the non-Jew. That's not allowed. On Shabbos, since you're not allowed to do anything anyway on Shabbos, what's the problem you're going to transgress? There's something you can't transgress. Therefore, you can invite a non-Jew on Shabbos and not a Yom Tov. Well, we'll get to a minute. Now, here is the leniency. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do if Nebuch, there's whatever, an intermarriage in the family, or a potential ger? Potential ger is already coming, but right now he's a goy, so there are technical issues involved. So there, one of the ways out is the Rambam has right here. Aval im boy hagoy may love. What if the goy comes by himself on a surprise visitor? You're sitting on your meal, knock on the door, it's the next door goyish neighbor and says, want to have a meal? The famous story with who? The Roman Caesar was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He came to visit, surprise visit, Friday night dinner. Okay, Friday night was okay anyway. But you could have an unexpected guest. An unexpected guest, then ochalimar mashem ochlim, they can eat with you that which you are eating, shikfar hechinua, because you've already prepared it. Now, if this becomes the leniency, I mean, you do get these shahs, people say, you know, we have cousins who are married to a goy, and we have to invite them for shalom bias reasons. So I say, well, don't invite them per se. Invite the Jewish people. If the non-Jew comes on his own, he comes on his own. You know, like don't go out of your way to exclude the non-Jew. Say, yeah, you know, you can come, and the cousins can come, and everybody else who you want to can come. But you're not inviting the non-Jew. So then the non-Jew, okay, so if the cousin's boyfriend wants to come along, you didn't invite. You know, you have to be diplomatic. You know, so can he come? Yeah, if he wants to come, he can come. But, like, don't invite him. Do you understand? Like, don't say, well, I'm inviting him to come. So the family's coming over, okay, if he wants to come, he can come. So that it's like he came on his own, not that you did it for him. So, and then, okay, then there could be other factors, you know, you have to ask Shilas exactly when and how we can be lenient, but that is a critical leniency there. But generally, we, you know, under normal circumstances, you would not invite Goyim for the Yontif meal. Okay, moving on. Halacha Yadal. So now that we're involved with Jews and non-Jews, let's take it a step further now. Behema shechetzio shel goy vechetzio shel Yisrael. Let's say an animal is half owned by a Jew, half owned by a non-Jew. Okay, now the Jew would like to shech the animal for Yontif, on Yontif. But on the other hand, if he's shechting it for himself, he's also shechting it for the goy, isn't he? The goy is going to have to eat this cow as well. So when I'm the Jew, shechting this jointly owned cow, I am benefiting and the goy is benefiting. So, can I do that on Yontif? So we say, Mutter l'shachta b'yontif. You may shecht it on Yontif. Why? Because she'ev shalechom en k'zayis basa b'loshchita. Because the Jew who wants to eat his k'zayis of meat, he can't eat a k'zayis of meat unless he slaughters the animal. So again, you're slaughtering it for yourself. Doing it for yourself. And it's not like, well, you could shecht half the animal, shecht your half. And don't shech the goy's half, and let him worry about his half. It doesn't work that way. One shechita goes for the whole animal. And I want to have a piece of meat. And it's my fault the non-Jew owns half the animal. I'm doing it for myself. And I'm not going to do all the other work for the rest of it. I'm shechting it. I'm going to cut one shoulder steak off of the thing, and whatever. And the goy can do what he wants with the rest. So you can't do it any other way. That is when it can be done. However, what if we have the following... Let's say you have a doe, and I don't know how, but before Yontif, the Jew and the non-Jew had joint ownership of the flour and the water, and they mixed the dough, and it's a big clump of dough, and now the Jew wants to bake the dough to make challahs. It's got a big, whatever, 2 pounds of dough over here, and he wants to bake challah on Yontif, which he certainly has a lot to do for himself, but it's a big thing that half belongs to the Jew, half belongs to the goy. So let's say, can I make, say, one huge challah, a 2-pound challah, a big zetzer of a challah. Can I best make this one challah, put it in the oven, and eat it, and I'm going to take my part, and the goy does what he wants. So Shelley says no. So let's see what the answer is. Osur lefos also. You may not bake it. How is that different than shech the animal? It's a fundamental difference. Because you could split the dough. The dough is jointly owned, so fine, give it a cut in the middle. Here, goy, here's your dough, do what you want with it, I'm taking my dough. An animal doesn't work out that way. You can't separate the animal in half. Therefore, but dough you can, so therefore you can't bake it all, you just bake your part. However, even in this part of baking, there is an extreme case where leniency is permitted. So let's say it was not unusual in the olden days that soldiers from non-Jewish countries would come into Jewish towns and would instruct Jews to bake bread for them. And the soldiers would bring flour to the Jews, and they would say, okay, here's our flour, we don't have time, we don't have any kitchens over here, now ladies, you go make the challahs for us so we can eat. And obviously the Jews would like to comply because they wouldn't like to have a pogrom coming over here. So anyway, so they give this to make bread on Yontif. And they came on Yontif and they want you to bake bread for them on Yontif. Are you allowed to do it or not? So now they say the following. Im kishenos nipasim en litinok ein makpidim. If you'll ask them, listen, is it okay if I take a little bit of the bread and I give a little bit of challah for my little baby? So if the custom is they'll let you take a little bit of the challah and use it for yourself, they ain't makpidim. They're not makpid. They're not particular about that. They'll let you do it. Then mutter lefos lahem biyontif. Then you are allowed to bake the whole challah for them. Yontif. Why? Shekol pas upas roy latinok. Because really, each and every piece that you bake, you're going to ask, wait a minute, you're baking a whole thing. The kid's only going to eat one little piece. But which piece is he going to eat? He could eat any piece of which you've baked. So theoretically, you've baked the whole thing, the kid could have had any piece that you're baking, and therefore you can bake the whole thing. Now you're going to say, well, why didn't we say that svara before? The answer is, well, it is a little bit of a press situation. You are dealing with non-Jews where there is a bit of a threat to your life. So therefore, we're lenient in that area. Because of the danger that's involved, the leniency is over there. Okay. Isas haklovim. How about now dough for, I guess there's some kind of a not very healthy kind of bread that could be made for dogs. So a dog dough. Okay? Bisman sharoim ochli mimeno. If the shepherds will eat from it as well, then nefis biyontif, you could bake it an yontif. It seems it's a low brand, high brand, whatever it is. Anyway, since the shepherds will eat from this as well, you can eat it. Now, here's the problem. Wait a minute, but based on the rules we have before, it still should be a problem. Why? Just bake what the shepherd has to eat and don't bake what the dog's going to eat. So the answer is, I guess you have to, the Mephorshim saying it has to be speaking in a case where, there was other food to give the dogs, and let's say there was meat, another food to give the dogs, so you didn't necessarily have to feed the dogs. So since you don't necessarily have to feed the dogs, then it's like you're baking it for yourself, and then it's like for yourself, and then you say, oh, I can give the dogs some bread too. You can give the dogs some bread too. So that's the leniency over there. Halacha tesvav. Hamavashel b'yontif. So what if you don't listen to us over here? And what if I'm a vashel b'yontif l'goyim ol v'heimol l'niach l'chol? What if you indeed do cook on yontif for a non-Jew without the leniencies that we've described? Or you've cooked for an animal without the leniencies? Or you're making it for a weekday? Clearly, you're clearly violating the law. So now what have you transgressed? You've transgressed a negative transgression. A negative transgression of not, you're not allowed to cook and do things for things that are not for a Jew. So normally we transgress a negative commandment. What's the punishment? What's the normal punishment? The rule of thumb?
Lashes.
As long as it's a negative commandment that has an action, you get lashes. So you'd think that if you go and cook on yontif for a goy exclusively, you would get lashed. The svara would say to get lashed. The Rambam says, ain't a loika. You don't get lashed for a very interesting reason. Sheilu bo lo orchim, because if guests would have come, then hoya oisatam shel roilam, then this food would have been fit to give to them, and therefore it's you can never really say that when you're doing the action, you're doing it exclusively and for sure for the goy. In other words, you're making some food, and you say, well, you're making for a goy, you're transgressing. Well, not necessarily. You can't hang me on that, because could be a Jew's going to walk in. I could have some guests. And if guests will come, then my cooking was for them. Now, so it comes out, while I'm doing the act, you can't say 100% for sure that when I did the act, it was a prohibited act. Don't then you could theoretically say it, if you're on a desert island and there's nobody else except Goyim, then maybe. But in a normal case, you know, it could be that Jews will come. Now, even if Jews don't come, it doesn't matter. When I was doing it, if a Jew would have come, then it would have been okay. And the problem is, we have to look at the action that you're doing. Is the action that you're doing, is it one... Now, of course, it's usher, you're not allowed to do it, and you get a negative on you, and all those things. But at the end of the day, can we lash the guy? So to lash the guy, when you're doing the action, it has to be absolutely, positively clear that this is going to be the end result of what you did. And that's not necessarily true. Because at any moment, a Jew could come in and get the food till the last second. And therefore, we can't lash him for that. Now, what if also an ashravahoser, what if he made for himself and he has leftovers, pure, simple leftovers, and now the nanny is scrounging around in the kitchen and wants to eat something, you have 3 pieces of chicken left over, certainly you could tell the nanny, go ahead and have the chicken, because I never made it for you, and it's extra now, and they could eat it. So muta lahachu, you can give it to the non-Jew, and you can give it to the animals, because, as again, it's no different than the case if they come by themselves, uninvited, you're allowed to feed them. It's the same thing like that. It's like they're uninvited and you're giving it to them. Okay, now we're moving on to a different aspect. We talked about food preparation. Now we go to another area that's also permitted on Yom Tov. Rechitza v'sicha. Harei hein bichlal achila u'shesia v'oisinei sebi'yom tov. Washing yourself. We're going to have to get into details exactly what is allowed. But washing your body and sicha, and anointing your body. Now again, this all has to be in ways that are permitted without violating other Hilcha Shabbos. But, let's not say that exactly. But, we'll have to another time get into more detail. We'll just give you the general rules now. But washing that would not be permitted on Shabbos, and certain anointing that wouldn't be permitted on Shabbos, is permitted on Yontif. And that's included in the overall leniency of eating and drinking. Why is that included in that overall leniency? So... What did I say? I meant Yom Tov. You're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. And the reason is... and here's the problem. The problem with anointing, if you look in one of the footnotes here, is that often you have to heat up the oil... to anoint, you know, you see when you ever go to the massage guys, they give you the warm oil and they put it on nice and warm. So sometimes you have to warm it up. So now, so obviously, if you're just going to take cold oil, on Shabbos you're allowed to do it. But let's say you need to warm up the oil that it's nice and warm and it gives you a really good pleasure. On Shabbos you couldn't do that, but on Yom Tov you could do that. That's the melacha part of the anointing that we're talking about over here. So you're allowed to do it because it's included in the general context of eating and drinking, which the Torah allows you to do. Now, how do we know that this is like eating and drinking? So the commentaries tell us, for example, on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to anoint. Because that really goes under the overall rule of drinking. Now, you're going to say, well, what do you mean? So, because we have a pasuk in Tehillim that says... they bring a pasuk that says that the water, it went into him like water and like oil went into his bones. In other words, when you put it on your body's got pores. And the pores, it absorbs into the body. So just like eating and drinking goes into your body from the mouth, so the when you're putting the oil on it, it gets absorbed into the pores, and that's like going into your body. So therefore it's included in the eating and drinking per se. I mean, we know if you would take anointing with many poisonous things, that eventually it could kill you. You know, so something is getting in when you're doing that. So therefore, you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. How do we know this? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "Ach asher yeochel l'chol nefesh," but that which you will eat for all souls, which includes l'chol shetzar chaguf, whatever the body needs. Okay, so whatever the body needs, whatever is giving the body pleasure. Okay, So therefore, it's a physical pleasure that the Torah says you're allowed to have. Lefichah, therefore, what can you do in general? Now, this is a very detailed halacha coming up here. Lefichah, mechamim, chamim b'yontif. Technically, you're allowed to heat up water on yontif. V'reichetz b'hem ponav yadav v'raglav. You could wash your face, hands, and feet. And this is why we are allowed to turn on the hot water faucet on Yom Tov. This is clearly the reason why you're allowed to do it, which you cannot do on Shabbos. But you could do this on Yom Tov. Aval kol gufo asa. Ah, so why can't I take a bath already? Why can't I take a shower? If you're telling me, when I'm allowed to heat up, I could take a fire and heat up water to wash my hands, feet, and feet. So why can't I heat up a little bit more to take a shower already? And for that matter, why can't I take a shower on Yom Tov? Because after all I'm making is the thermostat go on, right, and it's heating up the water, but that's allowed on Yom Tov. I'm allowed to, so why am I allowed to do it? So the answer is a rabbinic reason. Mishum gzeiras merchas, because it's a decree of bathhouses, which means to say, and this was also the decree that was for Shabbos. We know that, and we'll see in a second, the problem is there were Jews who would go to bathhouses because most people went to bathhouses. Go to a bathhouse, that's not a problem, but we're afraid that there could be certain violations, especially on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you know, you theoretically, could I go to a bathhouse where the water was heated before Shabbos?
Yeah.
And the water that's being used on Shabbos is finished, not going to be touched anymore. And it's hot and finished, and I'm having a hot bath. Technically you can, but the rabbi said no, because they knew that the guys who ran the bathhouses didn't have the greatest moral integrity. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do if, for example, you run out of water, and the clientele is coming, and they've paid you in advance, and you don't have a hot mikveh or a hot shower, and the guy down the street does? So there's a temptation to, nobody's looking in the middle of the night, I'm going to chop some wood, heat up some more stuff, and it'll be hot. And I guess they found people who violated. So because I said, no more going to take hot showers on Shabbos, finished, can't do it.
And on Shabbos,
and by extension, they applied it on Yom Tov as well, saying once you can't, you can allow it on Yom Tov, you might do it on Shabbos, because, you know, it's the shower, you know. So anyway, they prohibited it. It's a far stretch, and it's a very complicated sugya. And I remember listening to it. You know, it's a stretch of a chumrah. And what do I want over here? Look over here. There's other reasons given as well that are much more complicated reasons that some suggest there's biblical reasons behind it. And if you look in your footnote on page 188, it says, the Ramah forbids washing one's entire body, and how there's a safeguard, even when the water was heated before the commencement of the holiday. And the Ashkenazic communities follow the Ramah's ruling. But we're lenient if you wanted to wash your body, part by part. So if you really go through it, I'll tell you the truth. If you go through the sugya clearly, and I went through the sugya many years ago, it should be allowed. It should be allowed. But the rabbis, it's like, you know, like we went through the umbrella sugya. Remember, we went through the umbrella sugya. At the end of the day, we went through everything and said, really, you should be able to go with an umbrella. On Shabbos. We really went through it. If you remember, with Hilchos umbrella, we said, really, it should be allowed. But the rabbis said, you don't. Finished. You know, we have to listen to the rabbis. You know, so the same thing over here. This is one of these aspects where the rabbi said, you know, finished. So we listen to them. So and that's you know, the Rambam says clearly here not, and the tradition is not. Hang on, let's just finish the Rambam, then I'll continue. What about, and the Rambam says so? What about if you heat up the water on Erev Yontif? You could wash it on the Yontif. We only decreed it for Shabbos alone. That's the Rambam's opinion. But again, the Ashkenazim argue on the Rambam. So Sfardim could make it maybe be a lot more lenient over here in this area. But the Ashkenazim are strict in this. So again, technically, you know, And when does this become a major problem? When you have the 3-day yontas. You have 2 days yontas and Shabbos. I feel mamish dying. It's mamish Friday. I'm going to die. What am I going to do? I need to think. I need to do it. I'm going to kill me. Is it that? So, again, so if they're really not so religious and they're just getting into the ball game, so I'll be lenient for them. But a real person who's been firm for many years, really not. Now, again, you see, though, you could be lenient. If you want to wash your body portion by portion, we'll be lenient. You want to take some a yuntif sponge, not a regular sponge.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to do one part of your body and then another part, but that's never a fun way of cleaning yourself. But for sure what you could do without any shaila, if you still have a bidet, you could for sure go on a bidet on yuntif, because that's only washing one body part. So you clearly do that on yontif. It's not the whole body.
For each body part.
It's not a decree on that.
Glad you
can. Or we're also lenient for babies on yontif. We'll be lenient for babies on that as well. So although but Sephardim would seem if they hold like this, Rambam would be lenient if the water was prepared before you'd be allowed to do it. So at the end of the day, we paskin not to shower on yontif. And then under extreme circumstances, there'd be place for leniency. Let's say a person's very overweight and very uncomfortable, so there'd be room to make a leniency for that. But a regular Shomer Torah Mitzvah, Yerush Shemayim, would say, wait, if that's the worst aver you do in your life, it's not such a bad aver. Like I wouldn't say it's usher for everybody, those that are struggling, but those that are already on the tracks should try to avoid it. Okay, Shkayach. Okay, next Rambam class will be next Monday.
So what number was this?